Tim Clapp was only 5 years old when his grandfather, George Cairns, died, but he remembers him well.
Well, he was an incredible person. He was gregarious and fun and funny and smart.
Clapp has heard all the stories about his grandfather, including the one about how he helped launch one of the world's most lucrative fashion brands, sort of. Only a Game's Gary Wallach has the story.
Times were tough for the Cairns family at the turn of the century. So young George quit school in 1908 when he was a teenager.
He got a job at the Boston Herald as a copy boy. And it was a happy accident because he had to get the scores from all of the towns in the entire state, and he had to call everybody, which allowed him to get to know everybody.
By 1910, Cairns was covering school sports for the Boston Herald Traveler. It was a great time to be a sports writer. Soon, newspapers all over the country would feature splashy headlines trumpeting the exploits of Babe Ruth, Newt Rockne, Jim Thorpe, Bill Tilden, and other superstars. Over the next 5-plus decades, Cairns went everywhere.
He never missed a Harvard-Yale football game between 1908 and 1960. He went to the Amsterdam Olympics in 1928, covered that. In 1928, he was at the Roland Garros Stadium that had just been built, watching Tilden and Lacoste.
Rene Lacoste was one of the biggest male tennis stars of that time. Cairns was covering tennis for one of the Boston dailies. He'd gotten to know Lacoste a few years earlier.
He always wanted to meet the new and upcoming stars. So he made it as a point to introduce himself and get to know him in 1923 when he came to Longwood.
The Longwood Cricket Club, located just outside Boston, was the site of the first Davis Cup competition in 1900. In August of 1923, Team France was there to play Team Australia for a spot in the finals against the U.S. On an off day, Lacoste, Team France captain Alan Muir, and George Cairns took a stroll in a ritzy Boston neighborhood.
I remember my mother and my grandmother talking about it a lot.
And yet, no one can agree which street they strolled on.
And they're walking down the street, and they're just talking about the upcoming match against Australia. They stopped at a fine luggage store, and there was a beautiful crocodile valise in the big picture window.
Lacoste noticed it.
And he really took a shine to it and fancied it and made a big deal about it.
There's another disagreement about what happened next. In one version of the story, the team captain said,
"If you win your match tomorrow, I'll buy it for you." And in the other one, Lacoste said, "If I win it, will you buy it for me?" But either way, it's the same idea. And unfortunately, he lost his match to a guy named Anderson from Australia.
Actually, that's not true. Lacoste didn't play in that tournament. But France did lose to Australia. Whatever the real story is, Lacoste didn't get his coveted crocodile bag. But the story didn't end there. He got something more valuable.
My grandfather was there and heard and wrote an article about it, started calling him the crocodile. Over the years, he used to write lots of articles about him, and the name stuck.
It stuck in part because of the way Cairns described Lacoste's playing style.
He basically said that the crocodile described him perfectly, tenacious on his grip, flashing an omnivorous, toothy grin. He was relentless and chewed up his opponents slowly. But without a doubt, the valise was the genesis of it.
That gave Lacoste an idea.
He took advantage of it by having his suitmaker or haberdasher start putting these alligator logos on his sports coats and his hats and everything else he was wearing.
And Lacoste didn't like traditional tennis garb.
He was the first guy to get rid of sleeves on his shirt. He was the first guy to wear short sleeve shirts. He created this style himself.
The tennis world noticed, and a brand was launched. After World War II, Lacoste sold the foreign rights to his design and logo. By the early 50s, the Lacoste jersey was popular in the U.S.
And then over the years, it expanded into the iconic brand that it is now. And so they've obviously made a fortune.
During the 1970s and 80s, the Izod Lacoste brand enjoyed annual sales of over $150 million for its shirts alone. In 2014, Tim Clapp and his family took a vacation to Paris. They paid a visit to the Lacoste flagship store.
I told them the story, and they got very excited about it and wanted to tell the head of the company, whoever that was at the time. And they called him at his estate in Switzerland, and he was unavailable, so I never got to connect with him. But someday I still hope to contact his grandson, who I believe is still involved with the company, and compare notes about our grandfathers.
At this point, you're probably wondering the same thing I am. Did George Cairns ever make any money off of his inadvertent branding of René Lacoste's fashion juggernaut?
No, but we always joked we never saw any royalties, but he knew tennis royalty when he saw it.
For the record, Clapp doesn't think Lacoste owes his family royalties, but he does wish the company would acknowledge Cairns' role in the development of one of the most recognizable logos in the world.
That's Only a Game's Gary Wallach. George Cairns died in 1962 at the age of 69. He covered sports right up until the end of his life.